Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 43, A Nonviolent Reformation. Another significant theme in the wisdom lineage is the teaching of nonviolence. This episode, I will explore the contemplative foundation of nonviolence. The root of violence is the illusion of separation from God, from being itself, from being one with everyone and everything. When you don't know how to consciously live out of union with love, you resort to violence, fighting people who are not like you. Contemplative practice teaches you to not make so much of the differences, but to return to who you are beyond your nationality, skin color, gender, or other labels. It brings you back to your true self, who you are in God. When you can become little enough, naked enough, and honest enough, then you will ironically find that you are more than enough. This is the wisdom of the gospel. At this place of poverty and freedom, you have nothing to prove and nothing to protect. Here you can connect with everything and everyone. Everything belongs. This cuts violence at its very roots, before there is even a basis for fear, anger, protection, vengeance, or self-promotion, the things that often cause violence. One of the reasons that Richard Rohr founded the Center for Action and Contemplation was to give activists some grounding in spirituality so they could continue working for social change, but from a stance much different than anger, ideology, or willpower pressing against opposing willpower. Many activists love Gandhi's and Martin Luther King Jr.'s teaching on nonviolence, but it became clear to Richard that theirs was often an intellectual appreciation rather than a participation in the much deeper mystery. People on the left play the victim and create victims, exactly what Jesus did not do. And it is much more subtle than the same game on the right, but it still proceeded from an unkind and self-righteous heart. To create peaceful change, we first have to get the who right. Who are you? Most of us, particularly pragmatic Americans, lead with strategic questions. What? How? When? These are really secondary questions. Before we act or react, we need to wait. Wait for communion. Wait until we're reconnected to the ground of being. Wait until we're conscious. Wait until a yes appears. Don't operate out of the unconscious. Don't begin with a no, which is the constricted and self-promoting you. When you begin by connecting with your inner experience of communion, your actions can be pure, clear, and firm. This kind of action, rooted in one's true self, comes from a deeper knowing of what is real, good, true, and beautiful, beyond labels and dualistic judgments of right or wrong. From this place, your energy is positive and has the most potential to create change for the good. This permanent stance is precisely what we mean by being in prayer, and why we must pray always to maintain it. I'm not telling you not to act. The gospel wants to offer you a way to make your action sustainable and lasting over the long haul. People on the right tend to be perpetually angry and overly defended, and people on the left tend to be perpetually cynical and outraged. The gospel is trying to call forth a refined instrument that can really make a difference, because it is a new level of consciousness altogether. The activists who are themselves a new creation, as it says in Galatians 6:15, they are the lightning rods of God's transformative energy into the world. Let us take this moment to connect with God's transformative energy. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. I do not think that violence and negativity are natural to us. I believe you are made for love, that your natural abiding place is love, and that you, in fact, are love. Your absolute foundation is communion with God and others. This is the deepest me to which you must return before you act. From this foundation, you know you must act and you will act. But now from a place of positive, loving energy, you must start from a deep place of yes. The first step to moving beyond our temptation to negativity, which is really a death wish, is to recognize it is there. Julian of Norwich called this inner constriction contrariness. Freud called it the ego. Paul called it the flesh, or the old Adam. Merton called it the false self. They were all describing this petty thing that tries to define itself not by what it is for, but by what it is against. Before conversion, we are all like this. We don't know who we are or what we are for. This small self cannot radically connect with being because it's always defining itself in terms of comparing, competing, analyzing, critiquing, judging, labeling, and positioning, which are all basically mind games. They are no instead of yes. The next time you are offended, consider it a teachable moment and ask yourself what part of you is actually upset. It's normally your false self. If you can move back to the big picture of who you are in God, your true self, you'll find what upset you usually doesn't amount to a hill of beans. But you can waste a whole day or longer feeling that hurt until it eventually seems to have a life of its own and it in fact possesses you. At that point, it becomes what Eckhart Tolle rightly calls your pain body. We all have one. Pain body is probably what Christians meant by original sin. The only problem is your degree of identification with it. Eckhart Tolle defines this accumulated pain as a negative energy field that occupies your body and mind. In your mind, it makes you judgmental and negative. In your body, it makes you fearful and angry. You can observe this energy in yourself as a knee-jerk, self-protective reaction to everything around you. I emphasize the word reaction here because there's no clear, conscious decision to think or act in this way. Eckhart says, if you look on the pain body as an invisible entity in its own right, You are getting quite close to the truth. Eckhart never uses the word demon, but perhaps his term emotional pain body is a good description of what Scripture often means by a demon. Eckhart says the pain body wants to survive, just like every other entity in existence, and it can only survive if it gets you to unconsciously identify with it, which is what most people do. Then you are indeed possessed. In healing work and in meditation, you learn to stop identifying with the pain and instead calmly relate to it in a compassionate way. Some call this taming your dragon. Ironically, your demon now becomes a friend and educator. For example, in centering prayer, you observe the hurt as it arises in your stream of consciousness, but you don't jump on this boat and give it energy. Instead, you name it, resentment toward my spouse. Then you let go of it, leaving it on the boat, and let it float down the river. You say, "That's not me. I don't need that today. I have no need to feed this resentment. I know who I am without it." This is the beginning of emotional sobriety. Many are converted to Christ, but without this emotional conversion, their behavioral reactions remain much like everyone else's. Thus the importance of contemplative prayer. If you've been eating that resentment toward your spouse as a regular meal, the boat's going to come back around in the next minute because it's accustomed to you filling your plate with such fast, cheap food. When you still don't give it any energy, it'll probably try a third time too. Devils are persistent. "You've always identified with me before," it says. "But then you must know, who was I before I resented my spouse? And even before that, this is the primary way you learn to live in your true self, where you are led by a foundational yes, not by the petty pushbacks of no." Let us take this moment to connect with our true self. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Dom Helder Camara wrote, "When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why they are poor, they call me a communist." Dom Helder Camara lived from 1909 to 1999, and he was described as being heartsick and in fact had to see a doctor for physical distress resulting from the outbreak of war as the U.S. began bombing Iraq in 1991. The questions and concerns expressed by individuals to him were fairly predictable and seemed to carry a plea for solutions that would alleviate our worry, anger, and despair over seemingly insolvable global problems. For each of these, Camara essentially had one response that he stated and restated. We need to use the intelligence God has given each of us to see one another as brothers and sisters. We must take time to understand other people and not let the barriers of race and language prevent us from seeing each other as members of the same family. God embraces all human beings. The heart of faith is the call to love one another. Archbishop Camara said, "If you will live your religion, you will become different." He gave a gleeful little laugh as though that idea thoroughly delighted him. He suggested we use our next years to live as we say we believe, acknowledging God everywhere, living from that place within each of us where God dwells. It is a call to be courageous and faithful, to be who we are meant to be. Dom Helder Câmara was a Brazilian archbishop from 1964 to 1985. Under his guidance, the Catholic Church in Brazil criticized the country's military dictatorships and worked for social change. Câmara spoke and wrote against using violence to repress rebellions that resulted from injustice and poverty in other countries as well. In 1971, he published Spiral of Violence, which shows how basic structural injustice leads to escalating rebellion, which then leads to new repression. If you don't nip the spiral in the bud, recognizing violence at its lowest structural level, it is much harder to stop at the later stages. As evidence of his commitment to justice and to the poor, near the end of the Second Vatican Council, Câmara led a group of 40 bishops who celebrated Mass in the catacombs of Domitilla outside of Rome. The catacombs are where the early church would meet in secrecy before Christianity became the religion of the empire under Constantine. The bishops all signed the Pact of the Catacombs, which challenged their brother bishops to live in humble poverty, to serve the poor, and to be open to all, no matter their beliefs. Câmara is the one who suggested bishops stop wearing fancy and expensive rings, and the practice largely changed at that time. Dom Helder is a saintly example of not wasting time fighting something directly, or you will become just like it. The best criticism of the bad is the practice of the better. Just go ahead and live positively. Go to the side and do it differently. Don't waste time with oppositional energy. In the short run, you will have to hold unresolvable tensions, symbolized by the crossbeams on which Jesus was crucified. In the long run, you will usher in something entirely new and healing. This is third force wisdom. Even though Jesus exemplified this third force, his followers have been very slow learners. Let us take this moment to connect with a third force wisdom. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The practice this week is titled Loving Kindness. We all need to practice being kind, particularly to ourselves. It is only when we first reconnect with the infinite love that is our ground of being that we can extend that love to others through nonviolent actions. When we remember that we are love, we can truly wish even our enemies well. The Buddhist practice of metta, loving kindness, is a wonderful way to grow kindness for yourself and for others. Begin by sitting in silence and finding the place of loving kindness within you. Then speak the following statements aloud. May I be free from inner and outer harm and danger. May I be safe and protected. May I be free of mental suffering or distress. May I be free of mental suffering or distress. May I be happy. May I be free of physical pain and suffering. May I be healthy and strong. May I be able to live in this world happily, peacefully, joyfully, with ease. Repeat these affirmations as many times as you wish. When you are ready, replace the I in each statement with someone else's name. You might follow the sequence from the Maitri practice, another word for loving kindness, that I introduced a few weeks ago, gradually widening the flow of love to include a beloved, a friend, an acquaintance, someone who has hurt you, and finally the whole universe. Thank you for being with me. May your days be filled with loving kindness and a nonviolent reformation. Blessings to all.